This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
Malaysia should not be developed only in the economic sense. It must be a nation that is fully developed along all the dimensions. Economically, politically, socially, spiritually, psychologically and culturally.
Itulah yang dimaksudkan dengan wawasan 2020.
Let me be perfectly clear. The massive commitment to the pursuit of our economic agenda of the past must be sustained into the future. Indeed, we must proceed with even greater tenacity, even greater creativity and even greater effectiveness to eradicate absolute poverty absolutely, to ensure a fair and equitable distribution of the wealth of the nation, to ensure full partnership in economic progress, to ensure a society where there no longer will be...
Hello everyone, you are listening to Buy the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me, my fellow Malaysian, Shamila Ganesan.
Always.
Always. And in conjunction with, of course, yesterday was Merdeka. Whenever you're hearing this, just know that this show is actually taking place the day after Merdeka Day, September 1st. And so... we just wanted to talk about something that kind of looked at that. And so joining us for our, this is the September Book Club, is Sarah Kok. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Sarah is here because together we are talking about 2020, an anthology, which is published by Fixie and edited by Fu Sik Han and Leon Wing. And it has a collection of, well, actually quite a number of stories. Mm-hmm. And both, I think, a mixture of humor.
A mixture of a lot of things, actually.
Yes.
Satire. So there's sci-fi, there's satire, there's just everyday stories, there's a comic. I remember when the call for this went out, for local writers to put in, and it was all just meant to revolve around the idea of 2020. It's also worth mentioning that this call and the collection was put together and launched before COVID-19 was a thing. So it is kind of an interesting time to be looking at this collection because it kind of looks at both how 2020 in itself already wasn't living up to what they promised us 20 years ago, but also how even that was then upended by the pandemic, which no one saw coming. So interesting time to read this book, I'd say.
Definitely. I think the first time I purchased this was maybe, I think, a month after the MCO was announced. So I was reading through it, and the first thing I thought was, wow, we had so many hopes as, like, you know, pre-pandemic Malaysians had so many hopes for Malaysia. I'm like, this is not happening this year. No.
I think that, and also it speaks to the fact of the fact that 2020, I think, has always loomed somewhat large in the Malaysian mindset. Mm-hmm. It's almost achieved this sort of mythological state, right? This idea that by the time, there are stories in this book that explicitly make that clear, that we were promised flying cars,
yes.
We were promised, you know, Back to the Future-esque sort of shenanigans. And instead, I mean, just look around, this is what we live with. So it's not bad. But 2020, I think, has not turned out to be in any way or form what any of us expected. And strangely enough, I think this book showcases that truth can be stranger than fiction. Because while there are some imaginings of 2020 that are wild, you know, and there are some perversions of 2020, making fun of 2020, none of it has approached what we have. And for that reason, it's kind of a comforting read in that it's like yes. an alternate reality kind right. of look.
I'm glad you said comforting read because in a weird way, what this book reminded me of was the fact that a lot of the problems that the book addresses, they're not questions that are new. They are questions of inequalities. They're questions of injustice. They're questions of racial tensions, political corruption. All of which was, you know what, there before 2020 was a thing. They were there before the pandemic was a thing. They continue to be a thing. I don't know why that's comforting to me, but maybe something about the constancy of these problems almost makes me feel like we will also get through this. And that's a nice thought to have.
I think that's a very hopeful thought to have.
Are you about to dash it, Sarah?
Yes, I'm gonna stab it. I guess when I was reading it, I naively, as a 20-odd-year-old, right, I had the hope that it would be a lot more idealistic. It would be a lot more idealistic than what this is. I would have thought that Malaysians would have more hopeful sort of like futures for Malaysia instead of ones that are still very much intertwined with. A very big theme of this book is racial tension, right? So like I think about 5 to 6 stories are
more
about,
I would say. Yeah. Like it's prominent in at least 5 or 6, but it sort of underpins almost half of the stories that are in the collection.
Yeah. So that was a bit, it's not disappointing, but it was a bit, you know, it breaks my heart a little. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it, I think, for that reason, as a record of its time. Because, and I think it's super important, Sharmila, that you brought up when the call went out. Because I think when you're asking people to write about something that is as big as 2020, at least to Malaysians, I think the rest of the world is like, yeah, it's great. It's a, you know, it's a very even sounding year. But Malaysians have always held it to be this big thing. And so I think that it matters when you ask people. Because I think if you had asked people at different points, when we were maybe feeling more hopeful, when the economy is on the up, I think the kinds of stories you get would be totally different.
Even just post-Malaysia Baru.
That's what I'm saying. But when you ask people to do this, you know, set against political turmoil, set against all these different goings on that you don't feel you have a lot of control over, then I think this anthology is what you get. And it's worth saying that the anthology itself, it varies wildly in tone. I mean, we're making it sound kind of samey, but actually it really isn't. Each story is its own little capsule. And when you move from one to the other, it is often a huge swing in terms of tone.
Mm. It runs the gamut from very personal stories which have an underlying of an undertone of politics to sort of grand world building kind of stories to
high concept satire
to very introspective pieces which are kind of abstract and poetic in some ways. So yeah, it's actually not at all 2020 is a sort of loose umbrella under which there are just many examinations. And I kind of like that. I mean, not everyone would. And certainly it's not the same cohesiveness you'd get if one writer had written every short story in a collection. I kind of like how different each approach is. I think that's one of the collection's biggest strength. Just the sheer variety of the stories and the ideas that are in it.
Yeah, well, that is true to a point. I don't know, but this is just a personal feeling of it. It's just that when you jump from one type to the other, I remember there was like this really drastic jump somewhere in the middle of the book, if I'm not mistaken. And it kind of like reeled me back for a bit, and I stopped reading for 2 to 3 days, and I picked it up and I was like, oh. So that jump was a bit weird. But yeah, it has a huge variety of writings, and all of them have their own personality. Yep.
So how did you guys read the book? I think that's worth...
I was thinking that too. I would read a few at a time, take a break sometimes of like a week even, and then dip back in and so forth. So I actually... you could read the whole thing in a day, but it took... I sort of took my time over the course of easily maybe almost a month.
I was greedy. I was greedy until I reached the middle. So maybe not a great idea to like finish reading it at one go.
Not a binge read.
Yeah, not a binge read, but I finished it maybe within a week. And then after that, 2 months later, I was bored. Then I read it again to pick out the parts or reread the stories that I actually really liked.
I read it at a go. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of sat down and went through it. And I actually really liked that experience insofar as, funnily enough, I did not pick up on, I don't know whether this is just telling about who we are as people, I didn't necessarily pick up on the cynicism or think that the cynicism in and of itself was a bad thing. I think that if there had been too much idealism, then the comparison to the real 2020 would have been too much for me. I think it would have destroyed me. So the fact that there were hefty doses of cynicism and skepticism in the book around the idea of 2020, around the idea of progress or what progress means, kind of helped me go through it. And also because in a year where travel is somewhat limited, I like the fact that there were elements of sci-fi, of fantasy, of being in different places, zones, and mindsets, which I think good short stories allow you to do. So I actually really liked the shifts of tone and also the wild variance in terms of content.
And I think as far as the cynicism or the hopelessness somewhat goes, I think if you read a lot of these short story collections, it tends to be a fairly staple feature. It's a theme that writers in Malaysia tend to explore a lot. And I think because actually it is something that many people feel. I don't think it's the best of things, but maybe I already expected that that's what this collection would address anyway. And therefore it didn't kind of disturb me overly.
Hence naiveness.
No, that's not what we're getting at. It's really more, I think...
hopefulness is a good word.
Hopefulness, gosh, the youth.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to ask you, Sarah. I mean, you said that you went through it a second time round. So the second time, what was that like?
So the second time was, I think, during the CMCO. I still thought to a certain extent that some of the cynicism was a bit, not distressful, but a little bit heartbreaking. But by that time, I think we were also experiencing Black Lives Matter and the translation of it in Malaysia, right? In the conversations that Malaysians have. And so there was this one particular story about skin tones.
Yes.
Yeah, that made me tear up. I'm such an emotional person. But made me tear up a little bit at the end. And then I realized that, yeah, we will keep talking about these sorts of issues until maybe perhaps they cease to exist one day.
Which is something that the story itself imagines.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
And then subverts. So yes, we're talking today about 2020 and anthology in light of the fact that, well, you know, it is Merdeka. It is Merdeka in the year of 2020. Wawasan Duoplo. Was it everything that was promised? That's what this book kind of explores. You can let us know what you think if you've read it. And also, this is kind of kicking off a bunch of shows where we're going to be focused on Malaysian writing. So if you've been reading more Malaysian writing, if you'd like to recommend some names, do let us know. That number to WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Wawasan dua puluh, satu pandangan jauh. Bukan impian malah kenyataan, bersama kita jayakan.
Hello, you are listening to Buy the Book with Lynn Sharmila and Sarah, who is joining us for our book club, which is happening earlier in the month than usual because we wanted to time it such that it would coincide roughly with Merdeka. And we're talking today about 2020 and Anthology, which is a collection of short stories, short writings, looking at or examining the notion of 2020. And so we talked about how we feel about the anthology. Can we talk about how we feel about the stories then? I mean, you know, what did you guys make of the writing? You know, did you have some favorites?
I wanted to say right off that, okay, so I'm going to do pro and con. The best thing about the book is that there's so many different and really interesting ideas that are explored in these stories. There's no shortage of creative ways to interpret 2020 or even further, like post-2020. However, the thing that let me down a little bit about this collection is that I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of great writing in the sense of it being good writing, the craft of writing. A lot of it is written in a genre style, and that's not a bad thing, but not engagingly. So it's much more about the story than it is about the writing. And I feel like for good short stories, it needs to be about both. I just wanted to call out a couple of stories which I did think were written really well. 0202 by Catalina Rambuyan. It's a sort of... Those are one of those introspective stories I talked about. It's about someone who's from Sarawak, and that's written beautifully. William Tham's Geographical Constant, that's written really, really well, kind of draws on literature and sort of moves the story along while talking about different kinds of books and magazines, which I thought was really sweet. And then Mae Chong's 2020 Calling. She's a poet as well as a writer, and you can definitely tell that in her work. Also written very beautifully. But other than those, I didn't find any of the others sort of beautifully written, and I would have liked more of that.
Ooh, the concept of beautifully written. That was one of the things, right? Because I don't know, in my notes, right? I don't know why I did notes for this, but in my notes, I was trying to section them out into, oh, they were written nice. And it was 0202, mm-hmm. 2020 Calling. And I think this is a personal bias, Batteries. And
Batteries, that's right. Batteries was. And I think I overlook it because the story is so seemingly ordinary.
Yeah. And Masodole. Is it Masodole? Masalode.
I was selfishly keeping that because I was going to say it later as my favorite story in the collection. But
this is the right thing. Yeah. And was it Hindsight? I'm not too sure, but I'll get back to that later. And Geographical Constant, because I personally really like it when writers take sentences or excerpts from other books. I think it's a very nice call out, you know. Yeah.
What about you, Lim? I think I might be slightly apart from you guys in the sense that maybe because the book came from Fixie, maybe because it was what I was in the mood for. I really liked the high concept genre stories. Mm-hmm. It could also be that I speak as somebody who works in BFM and who therefore, you know, is sort of inundated day in, day out with these questions about our country and, you know, just how, where are we going? And at a certain point, you want a break. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I appreciated the breaks in reality that the book offered. And I think that's why I read it at a go. And that's why I enjoyed it in that particular way, because it offered a break from the news and from some of the kind of constant weighty issues that we are talking about. And so for that reason, I really liked the more sort of sci-fi-ish mm-hmm. stories. And I didn't really think about whether or not they were beautifully written. Mm-hmm. And for that same reason, the beautifully written stories, while I agree they are written very, very well, I feel like it would have been better for me to have encountered them elsewhere.
Mm. Mm. That does make sense because they do stand out in a particular way, and not everyone I think would enjoy the way they stand out.
Mm. I liked, for instance, Hindsight. I think you mentioned that earlier, Sarah, and I did like the concept behind that and kind of the way that alternate Malaysia almost is fleshed out very mm-hmm. quickly in, you know, not a lot of time. I also really, really liked The Last Malayan.
The Last Ooh. Malayan was lovely.
Yes. Yeah.
Except for the ending, which yes. I don't want to give away. But it's such a nice one.
So I do have, yeah, that's the thing, right? And that's the, and I think The Last Malayan is so emblematic of the beauty and the fear around short stories, which is that you can do so much in so little time, but also because you don't have a lot to work with, a lot hinges on every single element. And so it's true that if you don't like the ending, that pivot can be a little bit tough.
But on that note of a perfectly crafted short story, I wanted to go back to what you mentioned. So just before we move on, The Last Malayan was by Zed Adam Idris. Mm. But Paul Nyana Selvam's Masalode, it's such a great example of how you can do so much with so little.
Yes.
Using the short story form to its best, in that you don't want more of that story. It's just kind of perfect in itself, and it just covers all the points and it hits all the right points. I loved that story.
And I don't know, that was one of the few stories that were very telling of what 2020 is.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So when I was reading it, it gave me some weird sense of nostalgia, but at the same time, like, I can still go back to this, you know? It's still 2020. It's still like that. And I'll still be able to eat this particular thing from this particular auntie, and I feel great about it.
And I think it draws on food, which is such a Malaysian thing. I was surprised that food didn't show up more.
Mm.
It did show up briefly in Skin Dyes, which is the one that you mentioned about skin tones. Written by Chris Kwa. But in Masalode, it really is about the different kinds of Malaysian food and ownership and who does it belong to and how do we grapple with these issues. And I just loved that.
So
I think as much as I was saying that, you know, the elements or the more fantastical escapist stories were fun, I did also like, and these were both ones that you brought up, Sarah. So Masalode, which we've talked about. And I love the way people speak in that story.
Yes.
It's very, you know, it's very real and you can hear it. Mm-hmm. You can hear the dialogue. But also to what you mentioned, Batteries, which is written by Anna Tan. I think that that is a great example of how it is a small, almost mundane story, but it's so slice of life that it allows you to kind of be transported from wherever your own little exhausted house is into their exhausted household. And I really loved that idea of showcasing, I think, the grind of capitalism and how that is happening in Malaysia in what you might think of as even folks who are, what, M40, T20, whatever those meaningless categories are.
So overall, would you recommend this to people as a good read for this year?
I would, because to a certain extent, this book gave me a little bit of closure. Is not the right word.
Closure sounds
sad. but more like it was a break. It was a break from the reality that we have right now. And I would definitely always recommend a break to anybody in the form of writing. And yes, the writing wasn't stellar. Right. But the concepts, some of the concepts were really great. And it gives us a chance to think about what could have been and what can be in the future when 2021 comes, you know, riding by, if everything's good. So, yeah.
I agree. I think I would recommend it. Only because anyway, Malaysian writing is scarce. And I always think that anthologies are a great way to sample a little bit and get to know writers that you may not have previously known and then now might be inspired to check out other works. But also just because the idea is that I love getting a book where you get so many different worlds and ideas and minds to jump into. And I think this one does that very well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. For the sheer variety of it, I would 100% recommend it to someone else. And also because I think it makes small and digestible something that many of us aren't truly able to comprehend, which is this idea of the dream and promise we were sold of 2020. And so I like the fact that it parcels it out, it makes it digestible, and it allows 20 different writers to explore that in a variety of ways. So, yeah, I mean, I think we have issues with it, but yeah, as a read, it's lots of fun.
Absolutely.
So we've been talking today about 2020 and anthology. You can let us know what you think. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and also tweet us at BFM Radio. If you have something longer that you'd like to share, you can find us at buythebook@bfm.my. To footnotes. You know, right before we took that break, Sarah, it's not a break, but right before we kind of stopped for footnotes, you mentioned 2021. And I think that that's like a nice jumping off point because a lot of 2020 actually looks at futures. Some of them aren't even set in 2020. They're set in like 2200 or 2046. And so I think it's a nice time to kind of look at the idea of futuristic books and maybe whether or not we can kind of decolonize ourselves from the promise of the future we've been sold from Western writers.
Yes, because for so long, whether it's from movies or books, futures were always, I mean, they might sort of talk about names that sound like they were inspired from the East, but it was always very Western. Yes, they were written in English, but also just the markers, the way they were described, the cultural practices, they were all very Western. So for me personally, one of the best things that's happened in sci-fi over the last decade or so has been the gradual decolonization, if I may use that term, of sci-fi. And we're hearing stories from Africa and from Asia and of people who aren't just white people. And I love that. And I want to see so much more of that from Malaysia.
And I was thinking about what a dystopia would look like in a decolonized view, right? And I did a little bit of research on how dystopia came about. And so I reached to a point where it was the 19... 80s, I think, they were talking about...
She did a lot of research.
They were talking about tech and all this kind of stuff. And I was just wondering, in the context of Malaysia, what would that look like, right? Skin dye is sort of a good indication of maybe what a decolonized West... But...
it's tough, isn't it? Because to understand what a decolonized future or then future in fiction looks like, we first need to kind of understand what we want from decolonization. What does it mean to us? Does it mean we no longer write in English, for instance? Is that even a reality?
Well, you know, something that we did not bring up earlier while we were talking about 2020 was actually program Angkasa Raya,
which is a short story entirely in BM.
In BM, yes. And that's written by Anwar Shah. And I really enjoyed that.
I love that story.
Because it is essentially, it is as it sounds. It's a space program. It's the first attempt for Malaysia to kind of set up camp on the moon. You know, and when I read that, I'm probably new to this in the sense that I don't read enough fiction in Bahasa. I know that. And so to read these terms that we are so accustomed to hearing in movies, to reading in other books about space programs, about the Sea of Tranquility, about all these different elements, and to have that happen entirely in Bahasa Malaysia, and to have that also, and to have simple little political views kind of drawn out in broad strokes very quickly, I think gave a good idea of what potentially writing not in English, you know, writing in another language might offer.
Yeah, and as a sort of counterpoint to that, there's another story by Natasha Gideon called Hukum, which I found very interesting because she does this thing that I've only seen done a little bit in novels, where the story is in English, but the characters, who are Malay characters, predominantly speak to each other in very, very local conversational Malay. And that's it. It's not explained. It's not translated. So you couldn't understand the story if you didn't understand BM. And I found that really interesting because it got me thinking about, is that what it kind of could mean to write in a Malaysian sense? Because so if the character is Malay, then you just write it in the language that they would speak. And how far could you extend that to Malaysia in terms of writing literature that's both accessible and authentic, which I think is a part of what we talk about when we say we want to decolonize something like sci-fi or futuristic stories.
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent, it's difficult for us right now to imagine a decolonized dystopia because of how much reading material out there that is in English or in the form that we are so used to seeing, right? So I remember there's a book by Yiren Lee, if I'm not mistaken. It's a dystopia where everybody wakes up and does everything that they've ever dreamed of doing. That was a Chinese writer, and I have not read that book yet. But I would love to see how it's like. And this anthology does a really good job to a certain extent in explaining what a dystopia could look like in Malaysia.
I think that one of the reasons why it's hard to imagine this is because we are coming from a space where our history and our present is also informed by what we know. What we know is informed by some colonial hangovers that we have. I think it's impossible to say that they don't exist. It also is the fact that when I think about the kinds of messaging that we've received in the past, for example, from our double prime minister, you know, Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who has said, look east. Yes, that is looking to another Eastern country, but that's not necessarily forging or, you know, imagining what we could do independently of others. You know, looking at what a future that we decided to make all on our own, what that might look like. And so I think that our imagining and our thinking around this is somewhat shaped by countries that are already ahead of us, so that's one thing, but also by the countries that have previously occupied us. And so when I was trying to imagine what an independent Malaysian futuristic setting might look like, I really struggled with it, you know, and I would love to know how, for example, Indigenous peoples would be included in that conversation and in that fictional or non-fictional world. There's so many things about Malaysia that make the conversation unique to us.
So complex.
Yes. And I'm excited to read someone's writings around this.
You know, it just struck me as you were talking also that it's that thing that they always say when it comes to basically straight white men writing. And if you use Hollywood as a sort of umbrella for that for so long, Hollywood has always been comfortable telling stories of anybody and anything. It doesn't matter if nobody in that production crew was from India or China. They will do that movie anyway. And that's similar to books as well. For a large part of English literature, people just wrote about whatever they wanted, regardless of whether they knew what it was like. That confidence and that arrogance of knowing things, even if you don't actually know them, I don't think we have them because we've been denied it. And we're just now starting to figure out what it means. Who do we represent? Do we only represent ourselves? Can we tell stories about a futuristic Detroit? You know, is that something I'm allowed to do? I mean, yes, you are. You're allowed to do, right, whatever you want. But is it something we're allowed to do? And I think that's a difficult question to answer for many writers and maybe even for readers.
Man, I can't imagine. I can't imagine a future like that yet. I was talking to a few friends about what a futuristic Malaysia would look like in the concept of Malaysia, and all the answers that I got were very much Western answers. And it's so difficult because right now we are at a place where social awareness is at such a heightened point, right? So that would mean that, like what you said just now, we don't know how, if we should write, if we could write about this, and if we don't know that, are we able to actually write something that encapsulates the entire Malaysian experience?
And what is that entire Malaysian experience? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, essentially...
more questions than answers, yes, really.
But I think we always knew that when we wanted to talk about this idea of A, writing about a Malaysian future, and B, writing about a Malaysian future that is somewhat divorced from the context of the West, it was always going to be a tricky conversation. If you have any examples that you'd like to recommend to us of people who have delved into this type of writing, if you have thoughts of your own that you'd like to share on the subject, that number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio and write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. Sarah, thank you very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
You've been listening today to Buy the Book, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.